This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Toastmasters podcast. My name is Beau Bennett. Unfortunately, my buddy Ryan was not able to make it today, but I am going to continue and press ahead anyway with a great conversation with an old buddy of mine, good friend Vikas Jengren, the 2007 world champion of public speaking and also a former member of my district, District 31, up in the Massachusetts, Rhode Island area. Vikas, welcome to the podcast.
Well, what a pleasure to be talking to you again. It is very, very nice.
No. The pleasure is mine. The pleasure is all mine. So this is really exciting. You got a new book coming out. And actually, the book is out already?
That's right. It was published earlier this year.
Okay, so you have a new book out. That's even better than coming out. Before we talk about the book, let's talk a little bit more about yourself. Vikas, who are you?
So I like to call myself as a speaker or author and engineer and somebody who really likes to get complex things done working with a team. So that's really where I get my joy, is where I can work with a team and help achieve great results. Right now, I work for Shell Oil Company. I manage a team of engineers there, a group of about 20 to 25 folks. And apart from that, I do a lot of speaking and just written my book. So that really keeps me busy. On the home front, I have two small kids, and they also take a lot of my time. So life is busy but exciting.
Good. That's good. And you've written a book. The book is called Emote. So tell us about the book. What is Emote about?
The book is really a very different approach to writing and preparing speeches, but not, it goes beyond speeches. It's verbal communications in general.
Okay.
And the way it looks at a speech or verbal communication is a back and forth of information and emotion. And the real key understanding there is that all the information is really made memorable because of the emotions. Mm-hmm. So what it comes down to is a good speaker fundamentally is somebody who has a good understanding of not only their emotions, but also the emotions of their audience, and is able to work with the emotions of their audience. And that skill, at a very fundamental level, defines what a great speaker is about. Hmm. So this book explains that concept, that approach to speaking, and then helps people understand how they can become better speakers by becoming better at managing emotions or emotional journeys of their audience.
Okay, and who did you write this book for? Who did you have in mind as your audience?
So my audience was really anybody who speaks verbally, which is almost anybody at all.
Okay.
What you'll realize when you pick up the book is that it not only applies to speaking and competing, which was my background, but it also applies to an everyday conversation that you're having with your kids, or you're having a conversation with your boss at work, or you're making a Monday morning update of the project that you're working on. Really, the applications of this, the concept, go far beyond just public speaking. It's a very different way of approaching how you communicate verbally. and it will change the way you write and deliver speeches.
Now, when I think about this concept, I would think that the author would be somebody like a social scientist in emotional intelligence, but you are a scientist, but not a social scientist. And I think that this is where you're writing this from a very unique perspective, because you are pretty much one of your target audience members, correct? I mean, or you were somebody who was very scientifically minded and somebody who would not usually use as much emotion in their speaking. So how does where you come from give you an advantage to write this kind of book?
You ask a very interesting question, Bo. My background is, I believe, the real reason why I've been able to write this book and kind of lay out this approach. I really do not think that this approach is revolutionary. I think every great speaker does this automatically. What I believe I bring to the table is that because I didn't come from that mindset, my background is so different, I had to really learn how to be able to communicate well verbally. And because of that journey where I really was an ineffective communicator to somebody who now feels comfortable and hopefully does fairly well in verbal communication, because I went through that journey, I'm able to help people understand how they can get there as well. So sometimes you have, or I guess most of the time, you have very, very good speakers who are very intuitive. They just do it and therefore are not able to teach others how to do it because it's so natural for them.
Yeah.
I've had many conversations with very talented speakers that I meet at work and outside of work. And when I drill down as to what they are doing, they're essentially doing what I've written in my book. They just don't realize that. It just comes very naturally for them. So I think you're absolutely right. My background really is the reason why I'm able to write this book, because that unless I went on that journey and was able to go and try and figure out what I was doing at a fundamental level when I was communicating verbally, I would not have been able to put this book together, which helps others also develop that skill.
You know, this is called the curse of knowledge. And generally what that means is when you know so much about a topic and you try to explain it to somebody, you tend to miss all of the points that the person doesn't understand or doesn't know because you understand them so well. So it doesn't make you an effective teacher. Some of the best teachers are the people who come from a place where they were in the shoes of the people who they're trying to teach, and they understand what they had to learn. It's not intuitive to them. So then they become better teachers. And here's a little secret for you, for you and our listening audience. A lot of times when I do the podcast interviews, I don't read up everything I could on the guest or on the guest material, because if I know everything, I won't ask the right questions. I try to learn just enough to ask the right questions, and then I'll let the guest go ahead and tell me all the information while they're telling me, they're explaining it to the listeners as well. And I think that's those are both very similar concepts. And I find that very interesting because, like I said, most people who write this kind of book come from a background of the social science where they already know all this information.
Yeah, that is actually a very interesting perspective that you brought about interviewing. But you will see that in the book, I had to go back and essentially research a lot about emotional intelligence, about emotions, about the background that forms the basis of this book. If you pick up the book, you will see, you will realize that it's very much a research product. Mm-hmm. I really had to spend hours and hours sitting in libraries, going through documents, books, papers, and that reflects in the book. So my background is in research. I really enjoy doing that. But you will see that a lot of research went into understanding and explaining in a very scientific way what speaking was about and what this approach is about.
Great. Did you draw on the research of Daniel Goleman, his emotional
intelligence? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So one of the first people you read up on is Daniel Goleman's work. Mm-hmm. But there are many others who've done fascinating work related to emotional intelligence and the basics and the origins of emotions and how we can understand and explain emotions. Because that understanding is really the key to be able to then work on developing an emotion-based communication approach.
Hmm. Vikas, I'm wondering your take on a common problem. As a scientist, you probably understand that when you're speaking to a scientific audience, or at least a very technically minded audience, you can't go ahead and use very emotional language or flowery language, or basically you can't just say things that aren't supported by facts. There needs to be substance in what you say. So I'm curious, how does this book address that problem of speaking to a very technical or very scientifically minded group using emotion without just irritating them, without getting to the point or saying anything of substance?
Again, you're a very interesting question, Bo, and a very relevant one. The approach in no way undermines the importance of content. So this approach is not saying that you do not need content. What it is saying is that content is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And what the book tries to show is that nobody is going to remember your content if that is the only thing you provide. So you have to understand that the content is essential. That's what people come in to listen to you for. But if you just provide only the content, then after you're gone, they will not remember anything. So the memory part comes in, and the remembering part, and it comes in because you are able to work with emotions. And I'll give you a very simple example. All of us go to our favorite restaurant, and we probably have a favorite dish that we always eat. And my wife and I all love to go to Thai restaurants. And there is a particular dish, which is a chicken dish with a gravy, which is based in coconut sauce. Essentially, it's chicken and coconut sauce is what I love to eat. I always think about what fills my stomach. So it's what fills my stomach, the content, is really the chicken and the rice. But that is not why I remember that dish.
Mm.
I remember the dish because of the sauces and the spices that go into it. So if I was just served the sauces and the spices for dinner, I would be very angry. That's exactly your point. The content is what people come to listen to you for, but that is not why they remember what you have to say. The sauce and the spices, which translate to emotional content in your speech, are really the reason why the content is memorable.
That's an excellent analogy. I've never heard something like that before. Do you have that in your book?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, good.
I do lay it out in my book.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was going to just to say that it's emotion backed up with facts. You don't want to have the emotion in place of the facts. I thought that was pretty good, but I like your spice and chicken story a lot better. Again, it's emotion. It's visualization. It's connecting with something.
And actually, Bo, to tell you the truth, that's why stories are so effective. Mm. Because everybody says that you have to have stories in verbal communication, whether it's a larger platform where you're speaking to hundreds of people or even in a one-on-one conversation. But really the reason stories work is stories connect with you emotionally. They get you emotionally involved. You get to like and appreciate the characters and essentially gets you involved in an emotional way. And that is why stories for centuries have been the way people have transferred information through generations. So, mm-hmm. grandfathers told stories to their grandchildren and the stories were a way in which the information was made memorable. So this is, again, nothing new. People have done this for thousands of years. It's just that we sometimes don't understand why things work. And then hopefully this book lays out the basis of how we remember things and how we can use them in speeches and verbal communication.
Gotcha. Yeah. Just I'd warn everybody, don't forget the chicken. Whatever you do, don't forget the chicken. A quick story. I was just remembering this when you were talking. Back when I was like 18 years old, I was always a skeptic my whole life. I was skeptical about everything and everybody. But back when I was 18, I went to this multi-level marketing insurance seminar with my sister. And there was this guy there. He was probably like my age, like he was 18 years old or something. He had his hair slicked back. He was wearing like a suit. And he was given this presentation about this company. He said nothing about the company whatsoever. He told this 15-minute story about how he was poor and now he's rich and now he could buy his grandmother the house that she was almost kicked out of. And his eyes were all teared up, and I was looking around, and everybody in the audience, their eyes were all teared up, and they were standing up and clapping and cheering. And then it was over. And then we were sent into these individual rooms to sign papers and pay money. But I just couldn't believe that after listening to this seminar, like you talked about, there was no chicken. There was nothing. There was all sauce. And again, he did an amazing job connecting to people emotionally. But again, I got to caution, you need to have those facts in there. You need to have your main message as well.
I agree. And a lot of the times, the content is missing. But again, that's not a recipe for success. So I completely agree with your assessment that content is absolutely key. But again, the point is that content is not enough. And I think that's the place where a lot of the researchers and the technical folks get lost, is because there's a lot of content. They've done a lot of work. They've done fantastic research work. It's just that they forget to bring the emotions, and essentially their work is lost in the sea of research that's carried out, everywhere. So their work fails to stand out, even though the content is there, because they fail to connect emotionally. They fail to get the emotions to the play.
Yeah. And I also wonder if that has to do with the academic cycle. Like if you go through like master's or dissertation work, and you are told over and over again when you're writing scientific paper that you can't put emotion in there, you have to take out all those words. It has to be very, very straight, very tight, very non-emotional, very factual, because that's what the journals want when they publish something.
Again, you bring up a very interesting point, Bo, and you're absolutely right. The way we write technical information has affected how we present technical information as well. In fact, you will see it's very common to go to a research conference, for instance, and have presentations presented almost exactly like how they were written.
Right.
And it's terrible. It makes for a terrible presentation, but it's basically exactly what you're saying, is people have been, that concept has been drilled so much into the scientific community.
Yeah.
That emotions are not what you bring to a scientific presentation. In fact, many business people also think that emotions have no place in the business community, in the corporate world, which again, it doesn't make for anything to become memorable. I understand where they're coming from, where they don't want their decisions to be affected by emotion. But that doesn't mean you leave emotions completely aside. What it means is you have to understand what emotions are and be able to make good decisions with emotions around you, rather than trying to leave emotions completely out of the door, which is difficult, because we are all emotional beings. It's difficult for humans to be non-emotional. It's very unnatural, and that leads to a lot of all kinds of problems, including a lot of stress.
Hear, hear. Good stuff. So, Vikas, where can people pick up this book and when? You said it's on the market now?
Yeah, it is on the market now. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the online stores, but also available in bookstores. So I would encourage people who are interested in the topic and would like to understand a completely different way of approaching verbal communications to pick it up, read it, and then send me feedback. I'm actually very interested in hearing stories of of people who have used this in an everyday life without even probably realizing it. So one of the things that I really enjoy in what I do, or the setup that I have right now, is that I work in corporate America, and I get to use a lot of the things that I write about on a daily basis. I'm working with teams, I'm motivating them, I'm helping them achieve big things, and all the stuff that I actually write about, I try out in my corporate environment. And those stories are something that really help me understand and perfect things that I'm trying to put out there for others to read and digest. So if people have thoughts, ideas, again, stories that they want to share with me, they can just go to my website and write to me, and I would really like to hear from them.
Well, Toastmasters love to give feedback. That's something that we know, so I think you'll be pleased with the amount of response that you get. Vikas, one more question. Where can people find out more about you or about your book?
Yes, the easiest way to do that is to go to my website. It's vikasjhingran.com. That's spelled VikasJhingran.com. And I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. So there are many ways in which you can get hold of me and follow what I'm doing.
That's great. Vikas, it was a pleasure speaking with you, and I hope we could see each other again sometime soon.
I'm sure that'll happen, Bo. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
All right, you take care. Bye-bye. Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.